Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blind Bargains Cast, episode 87, and a bit of a slim down this year in assistive technology for 2016. Hi, I'm Joe Steinkamp. My partner, JJ, is feeling a bit under the weather at the time of recording, or he's traveling, or he's not feeling well while traveling, which would really stink. That's a horrible way to bring in 2017. That's just great. Happy New Year, everybody. With me, though, to go through the year top stories is good old Jamie Pauls. Hey, Jamie, long time since we've had you on the program. How are you doing?
I am marvelous. I am tired of eating. My New Year's resolution is to eat carrots for 2017. That's it.
Yeah, cooked carrots in an Instapot. You will hear an outtake from that from episode 86, which is available in the download feed now. Thank you, Patrick, for all the wonderful, wonderful outtakes. As we often say, that is his revenge, and he had it upon us in droves. And also in the middle of all that, hey, someone else was in there too. Miss Shelley Brisbane, regular extraordinaire. Hello, Shelley, and welcome to the program.
Hello, Joe. Thank you. Hello, other pod people, friends out there. Happy 2017.
Well, it was an amazing year. It was a little different than most. The format here, in case you're unfamiliar with years past of this year in AT, is we'll go through from 10 all the way down to 1 of the stories that were voted by our panel of our BBQ regulars this year. Some of this is sort of influenced but not completely derived in the article that I have up, which is our listener voted stories of 2016. And by voted, I mean the number of downloads. So when you look at that particular article, that is the number in which people had downloaded the articles or clicked on the links of the articles or listened to the articles. Listen to the interviews. 2016's wonderful content. And so that is where we get a lot of information from on how we're going to shape the programs of 2017. But this is more of our own internal musings, our look at how stories approached either during the interview process at convention or when we were getting in letters, or you would tweet us at blindbargains.com. And of course, then we also took into account our own personal reflections on things that we had with interacting with various people. As you know, Jamie and Shelley write for Access World, and so they've had some experiences outside the BBQ universe. And then Shelley was with me in CSUN and has done some interviews going back to CSUN 2016. So we have a lot to choose from here, and definitely that impacted a lot of it. And we'll have more about this in the show notes if you take a look over at blindbargains.com. Now, with all the preamble out of the way, that means we can get down to the stories, the nitty-gritty, if you will. Number 10 happens to be voted on by a couple of us here on the staff, and that would be the bill that's going to make things really interesting by allowing NLS to experiment with the ability to bring Braille displays to its patrons. Who wants to take this one first?
I mean, the fact that Braille might be more affordable through something such as, you know, the Orbit Reader product that may come out soon or will come out soon, or something like that is exciting. And the fact that this can be distributed to people is even more exciting. I'm all over the whole, this is 2016 being the year of Braille thing. And so I love all of the Braille stories that we have and what that means for the blind community, I think.
It's a pretty mind-blowing change of scene. I mean, it's counterintuitive for most people to think that a Braille display is the less expensive or is far less expensive than it used to be, and it's nothing but good. And I know that sometimes there's a perception that organizations that are providing technology for blind folks are not exactly as limber as one might like, and the fact that both Congress and NLS have gotten on top of this in the first year that an inexpensive set of Braille displays has become possible is a pretty cool thing.
It's interesting that you bring up that, having worked in government for 10 years at a vocational rehabilitation agency, that fueled my comments when the story came up in the middle of the year that some might actually kind of devalue Braille in an odd sort of way. And where I came up with that is we gave out a lot of language masters, Slate and styluses, other tools for individuals who are going through the vocational rehabilitation process to learn skills or beef up skills and the like. Do you think, panel, that there is a danger of Braille displays becoming kind of disposable technology in a way?
I think it's way too early to be able to say that. I mean, we don't really know what the impact of inexpensive Braille displays and how many inexpensive Braille displays are going to become available. And I'm not exactly sure where you're going with disposable technology, because to the extent that people can upgrade inexpensive Braille displays because they're inexpensive, that'll be a good thing. To the extent that Braille displays make it possible for more people to use Braille more often, even people who have either largely moved beyond Braille or who have compartmentalized Braille into a certain part of their life, it seems like nothing but good at this point.
Jamie, you've seen things from the vocational side once or twice. You've had technology issued and things like that. Would you feel more compelled to want to use a Braille display with more features than one that would be issued kind of bulk from the government, like, say, versus an NLS player?
Sure. I personally would prefer something with more features, a little faster refresh rate, that sort of thing. But if I didn't have the ability to get hold of that, would I be okay with a less complex device? Absolutely. It's interesting. I mean, I use a lot of refreshable Braille, but I also use a lot of audio. So if I read Braille from a Bard, I want the hard copy. Now, I'll read many other things in refreshable Braille, but there's something to be said for just having a book or a magazine on your lap and being able to read it. So would I use refreshable Braille over hard copy Braille? Probably not as much. If I was going to do something instantaneous, it would be audio. For me personally, yeah, I'm going to prefer the more full-featured devices, but I suspect that there's quite an audience of people who will take advantage of this.
And I guess the argument you could make is that if cheaper devices become available, it makes it harder for the companies that are making full-featured devices to continue doing so, both because there's less of a literal market, and because when those devices are ordered by voc rehab agencies and the like, they're going to tend to order the less expensive ones. And so I guess there's a potential that you could see technology not developing as quickly, or that companies would slim down their lines and that you'd have less choice. But I think it's too early, especially in this specific context, to know what's going to happen, although we have some stories coming up that might speak indirectly to what would happen in the future.
Agreed. And I think you hit right on that when I was doing the prognostication and slipping a little into 2017, because the APH Braille display, especially that is going to be in the sub 500 category, has slipped. It was supposed to come out in Christmas. Now has moved off a little bit into the spring of 2017. This story might have had greater impact, or we might be feeling some of its impact right now had it been shipping. There are conversations I've had with some of those companies who make more of the higher end displays. They are certainly aware of it. For some of them, they see it as an opportunity to explain why their devices are different, and that you would use some of these subcompact sub 500 units as a backup, as a secondary. Now that you've had a taste of what Braille is like, it can be so much better if you're using our display, our feature set, our ability, you know, USB-C connections in the case of the new BOM display. So there's a lot of opportunity that some see is available in 2017. Some would say that that's a Pollyanna kind of approach, but I don't think that they have much wiggle room at this point, because if this is happening, this is about as big a shift for Braille as the handheld video magnifier market was for CCTVs, wouldn't you think, Shelley? Because that price point was something that people could obtain on their own. They could have video magnification, and sure, it was more for spot reading, but it did open up a whole new world for low vision individuals.
And what you see in that market is that you absolutely have commoditized products that are built and sold from outside the U.S. that may have fewer features, but they meet that value need for that a lot of customers have. But you still have the big companies in AT making, if not Cadillac units, certainly units that have higher build quality and have a few more bells and whistles, and now integrating things like tablets. So it seems like that market, to make a comparison, is finding ways to give features on the high end that people are still going to want and need.
definitely it was one of the things that people wrote in most often about to us on feedback at blindbargains.com or our various social media, or asked us at convention, what was our opinion? When did we know if it was coming out? Were we going to have one to be able to talk about? Could we get Larry on the program to talk about it even more at APH? So it does have a good mindset for stories in 2016. But one of the other stories that kind of came up for some of us on the panel happens to do with a certain company that has usually been much higher on the countdown in years past. Naturally, the year of 2016 was not necessarily the year of Apple. The company from Cupertino went through some slings and arrows this year in any number of its products, whether it be some people that were questioning the iPad Pro in the 9.7 line, the missing headphone jack in iPhone 7, or the story that was specifically noted here in our countdown, the Touch Bar MacBook Pro. Very derisive. Even amongst Apple loyalists, this particular model has kind of been a drawing line for some people on whether it was a good idea, whether it fit, whether it was for them. And just like kind of the Braille story, this really does come down to individual preference on how you use a device, on whether you would like it or not. Jamie, Shelley and I have spoken about this on any number of podcasts. Let's get you into the fray. How did you come about thinking with the new Touch Bar Mac, and better yet, do you want one?
Do I want one? No, I'm not chomping at the bits for a new laptop at this point. My MacBook is about a 2012 model, so starting to get a little age on it, but still runs quite nicely. And I hope that it continues to do so for a while, because if it died tomorrow, I mean, I'm using Windows 10 a lot more. Would I justify buying a Mac or book, or would I justify buying a Windows 10 laptop at this point? And I don't know. The jury's out on that one. I enjoy the operating system a lot, but as far as the Touch Bar as opposed to keys, if Apple had asked my opinion, I would say, hey, I would prefer keys. Thank you very much. Let's just leave things the way they are. But from reading things such as Alex Hall's excellent blog post over on AppleVis, of which I'm affiliated, and put a little small plug in there, he basically said, hey, it's not horrible. You know, there's some things to get used to. There are some workarounds that he has needed to do, and maybe some things aren't quite as quickly done, but it isn't like the sky has fallen. So would that stop me from buying? Would that be a deal breaker on its own? No, it wouldn't.
There was some commentary among the other folks voting on Blind Bargain Stories this year that I didn't put this one on my list. And I, being a well-known Apple person, I won't say fangirl, I won't say expert. I need another word. But in any case,
I'm the Apple. I'll go with that. And important.
Anyways, I didn't put it on my list for a couple of reasons. First of all, I didn't feel like the Touch Bar was an accessibility story, except to the extent that we have to figure out whether it is accessible. Apple attempted to make a pitch about accessibility when they were presenting this MacBook Pro, but that had very little to do with the actual machine. And so for me, it appeared to be an interface that we had to understand. And I echo what Jamie says about Alex's piece over on AppleVis. If you want to know something about how the Touch Bar works in practice for a voiceover user, that's what you need to read. I won't go into much detail here, but I will say that for a low vision user, it's a bit more challenging and I think offers less direct benefit and perhaps is more of a workaround. So from that point of view, I've got some reasons to be critical of it. But just in terms of whether it was the biggest story to do with Apple this year, I'm not even sure that's the case. I think there's obviously a lot of concern about the headphone jack and the iPhone 7 that Joe mentioned, and just even connectivity with the MacBook Pro itself and USB-C, and some of that stuff will be sorted out later. But I felt like this was not a year when Apple was making giant news, either for our community or for technology industry in general. I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm not an Apple doom and gloom person at this point, but I do feel like this was another one of those years where Apple is not making revolutionary change, but making evolutionary change. And certainly the Touch Bar MacBook Pro is a part of that, because it does represent a significant change in the MacBook Pro line, but it doesn't really turn the company into something substantially different than it was before.
Yeah, I think it we had talked before we started recording that it seemed like the Consumer Reports article in which they did not recommend the MacBook Pro opened up a floodgate of not necessarily clickbait, but definitely a pylon where people were starting to say, you know, and another thing. And they would go off of the a line. I saw recently Lifehacker or The Verge had a, oh no, it was Imore. Imore had a, our bag for carrying all our dongles, our favorite bags for carrying dongles. And I was like, well, that's a way to kind of spin the controversy. And it was something that we shared with the mainstream. This may not have impacted greatly or as greatly as some might think on the visually impaired and blindness community, but it sure did in the creative community and the mainstream communities. It was something that was a direct article that would show up at least daily in my newsfeed from various publications since its release. The battery, it's been a month. Do I still feel this way? A lot of things like that. I think in general, I am more impacted by the iPhone 7 story because I lost my dongle New Year's Eve weekend. I placed it down somewhere and it has now disappeared where socks from the dryer tend to go, which would be Narnia if you watch your Family Guy. And that was the first time it really impacted me. The first moment I went, well, I guess I'll be using my iPad when I went to charge slash use my headphones because I haven't felt like I needed to get a dongle or dock for being able to use the device. And I just recently compiled a new Apple Rundown article, and I just had to stop grabbing articles because it was skewing way too negative, and it was becoming almost self-parody. I think a lot of people have waited and been sharpening their knives and decided to go ahead and just go to town on Apple this year. And as someone who's known as being more of a Microsoft fan, I kind of felt bad about where things were going to the point that I think it's just gone a little too far. And maybe that's what we need. Maybe we need a correction. Maybe we need this kind of story to get out there a little bit. And there's a lot of talk between Silicon Valley being too engineering first or too their empathy problems, and that users are kind of a secondary consideration to the way that design is happening. And that might be a story that carries over into 2017. It might be very, very interesting.
I think the one thing I would say about the Consumer Reports article is that it's significant in a couple of ways. First of all, it's obviously not part of the tech press. Consumer Reports is, in fact, often criticized for the way it reviews technology by people in the tech press who are fairly knowledgeable. And I have spent a lot of years reviewing products in a sort of tech-centric bubble. And Consumer Reports has never been a source that has been particularly important to us. However, it's important to Apple. And what was noteworthy about the story was how Apple reacted and the extent to which Apple wanted to find out what Consumer Reports issues were. And they're going to be much more sensitive to Consumer Reports opinion than they are to a review in iMore or even a publication that has a history of covering Apple every single day. And I know this from talking to people who cover Apple for mainstream journalistic outlets like newspapers and magazines that have nothing to do with technology. That gets Apple's attention. And Consumer Reports gets the attention of people who never read any tech press. And I'm not saying that it does or doesn't indicate a serious problem with the specific technology involved. What I'm saying is it got Apple's attention, and getting Apple's attention is often a very difficult thing, and getting Apple to either commit to change or be seen to be committing to change is not something that happens very often, and I think mainstream negative coverage is going to get their attention every time.
Yeah, we're definitely going to come back to that later on in the countdown. I'm just really surprised as someone who's been watching for a while and own several Apple products. It was a very interesting year to the point that I kind of landed with Ricky in Jamie's category where we bought a MacBook Air. You know, it was like, we'll just punt this year rather than upgrade the Pro in the house. And I'll be very interested to see what happens with iMacs later in the year. Now, our eighth story, we really kind of got a sneak peek back at CSUN. JJ interviewed Peter from Amazon, and he gave us a good look at Amazon Voice View. And really, that's just the small bit of what happened in 2016. Really, and we'll touch on this in a little bit, but Amazon just came to play, whether it be the Fire Stick with its accessibility in Alexa, whether it be the remake on the Kindle tablets, everything but Kindle for PC, right, Jamie?
Yeah, there you go. You know, I have one of those $50 tablets and played with it for about 3 days and put it away for a really long time and need to get it out and play with it again. But I'm so pleased that they've done what they have done and that they are continuing to work. I would like to have audio description on Amazon Instant Video, please.
So
I don't think
agree.
They call it that anymore, right? Yeah, the Amazon Prime Video service. But other than that, I'm pretty happy with. I have a friend who has an Echo, and would like to play with that. Although he thinks I should wait and play with Google Home and see how that works.
That friend isn't me, but I would agree with whoever this friend is.
It's a good guy that's a computer programmer and incidentally has cerebral palsy. Obviously, we're not related to blindness, but certainly appreciates disability issues and certainly uses the Echo. He's dimming his lights and stuff like that. He's getting his house hooked up pretty well.
Home automation, yeah.
Yeah, but all of the work that Amazon is doing is great, I think.
It's interesting to me that the Voice View feature was not brand new when JJ had that interview with Peter back at CSUN, but it felt like a new release. And they did have a major release, but I think also Amazon took that moment to publicly declare where they were with accessibility. Peter's been with Amazon for a while, as I understand, and they have a team over there that's worked on accessibility. But this was the year when they had it enough accessibility going on that they could say, well, we may not be completely ready for prime time. We're no Apple, but we're getting there. And I think that's a theme we may come back to again. But Amazon certainly has said, and keep in mind that these are consumer products. Some of what Apple has done and Microsoft and to some extent Google is motivated by the need to provide accessibility for students and for people who were employed for legal reasons and also for market reasons. But Amazon is in the consumer space to a large degree as far as the I have one of those $50 tablets too, and we welcomed an Echo Dot into our home for Christmas, so I'm just starting to get to know that little guy. And as consumer products, Amazon, I think, has more of a choice. There are certainly laws that do require equal access, but Amazon would have had more flexibility. And so some of what they've done does feel like they've done it on purpose and without being forced to do it. And I agree about the audio description 100%. But the fact that it is continuing to roll out to more of their products is certainly encouraging. Amazon left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths back when they were trying to restrict access to speech on their Kindle devices and with e-books. And that seems to have turned around in general. So I have issues with Amazon as a company, but they have nothing to do with accessibility. I feel like they're making progress. I think they have a long way to go. And again, I'll put a little toe in the low vision waters here and say that some of their visual interface tweaks are not to my liking and they're not as convenient. And I am comparing to iOS and macOS, where I spend a lot of my time. But I feel like those are features that are to come. And I also feel like their level of openness in terms of being willing to hear what our community has to say is also improving. And we need to keep holding their feet to the fire as far as that goes and make sure that they hear what we want, including audio description and including some fonts that aren't quite so ugly and hard to read.
They were chastised for many years. Amazon had been one of the accessibility whipping boys from the Kindle on across, or when Audible decided not to go with third parties as much. So some talking book players or accessible devices that you would normally read NLS and the like would no longer have direct access. So it's kind of striking and funny to see so many of our community warming up to the brand, whereas blog post after tweet after Facebook rant, say just 3 years ago, would have placed Amazon in a very demonized position. Peter was actively looking at companies on the CSUN floor. He was taking resumes. He was listening to people. They, like several other big giant assistive technology companies or technology companies in general, is manning up. And you started to see some of those fruits come to market from all the labor that had been put in. And it certainly didn't stop. Amazon is a big company, though, and it has multiple divisions, just like Microsoft, just like Apple, just like others. So certain parts of it still need a little bit more work. And I know exactly what you're talking about, Shelley. I run with NoScript on Firefox to keep some of those product descriptions or popovers or pop-ins from happening, because I just drives me crazy. And so I agree, but it's a good thing that some of their services, since they are about 30% of the retail landscape by last opinion from NPD and other analysts, work for the most part. I haven't played with the new Apple TV app. I'm kind of curious about that. There's just so much that comes out from all these companies, but I'm interested to see how that works. I'm also very curious to see how things continue, because Amazon has no problem in just refreshing their lines at will. So the $50 tablet you bought last year will have possibly very little to do with the $50 tablet they might release at Christmas or around the April or whenever they want, because Amazon has demonstrated that the product cycle is theirs to dictate whenever they feel like it. I will say this about accessibility, though. The Mayday feature, when it was first introduced, was something that Buddy Brannon played with. He was kind of my guy that I would turn to for Apple and Amazon things years ago. And they knew a lot about turning voice view on and other accessibility functions when you did the Mayday feature. Now, the Mayday feature is you hit a button and you talk to a customer service type representative person. And they were knowledgeable, or at least had scripts that they could get to that could walk them through to be knowledgeable about what Amazon offered and what things were available. So that, you know, from a forward-facing perspective, is probably a good thing. But Amazon as a whole is a story that I will be interested to see grow in 2017. And I am completely with you guys. If you're going to offer exclusives in video, those just need to be available. Even if you sell them on DVD or something, give me the opportunity to get to that material with audio description. And as a Doctor Who fan, here's my shameless without JJ here to stop me. Doctor Who left Netflix, which was audio described, over to Amazon Prime, where it is a Prime exclusive, and now it's not described. So in the United States, the only way to view that is unfortunately through non-legal means. And that's kind of upsetting and depressing. So here's hoping that that changes.
We'll be back with more of the top stories of 2016 after this message from Hims.
Go make it happen with GoVision, the new transportable video magnifier from Hims. With GoVision, you get all you'd expect from a transportable read, write, and distance magnifier with optical character recognition, plus the ability to enlarge and customize files, photos, and videos from your cell phone, tablet, or computer. Look at a slideshow of pictures from your vacation right from your thumb drive. Bring the world into focus with GoVision. For more information, call us at 888-520-4467. Visit us on the web at www.hims-inc.com and follow us on social media. Hims, lifestyle innovation.
Amazon relies heavily on a skewed version of Android. It's a forked version, and Android shows up a lot, not just in this top 10, but in our CSUN coverage. If you look at the top 10 stories of CSUN, a lot of them have an Android bent to them. One of the bigger products that came out of the CSUN era of 2016 was the Braille No Touch from Humanware. We have a demonstration, of course, from our coverage, but it has seen some significant upgrades, as Scott has covered here on the Blind Bargains cast. JJ has been interested in this for a while. I knew of it years ago, back when we were at that Android show. I'd had conversations with Greg in early development on where they were going and couldn't say anything for the longest time. So I thought it was really interesting that this finally came to market. Jamie, did you get a chance to lay your hands on one of these things yet?
I laid my hands on one, reviewed it for Access World, and eventually got one for myself. It's interesting because I have two note takers, and yes, I know some people will be a little envious of me. I actually have a Braille Edge sitting in front of me that stays on the computer most of the time, and then I have the Braille Note Touch, which I use for the college class I teach, for the music therapy work I do in school. So it's more of a work device. The Edge is more of a Braille display on the computer, and I take it on the road if I play music and want set lists and just kind of need to grab it and go quickly. So the Braille Note Touch is interesting because, being a Google certified device, it does allow access to third-party apps, but really the main draw of it, I think, is the work that Humanware has done with the Keysoft suite of applications, the word processing, the calendar, the contacts, the calculator, everything that they offer, plus what they're calling Touch Braille, which allows you to fold the physical keyboard comes in a case or in the case that it ships with. So it's not physically attached to the tablet itself. So you can take it completely out if you want and get a case, I believe, that they are shipping from Executive Products that does not include the keyboard. And you can just use the touch screen. So Touch Braille is where you can lay all 10 fingers on the screen and calibrate your fingers and then type. And there are certainly many products, many apps that have done this on iOS, but Humanware has just brought this to a whole new level and really made it. I mean, you could calibrate 10 times in a minute if you wanted to, because it's instantaneous. So if you type, you get a little off track, you can recalibrate and instantly be on your way. So in a meeting, if you turn all the sounds off, the key clicks, the navigation sounds that Android is famous for, and you can have it completely silent. You can turn speech off and just use the Braille display. An absolutely completely silent option for taking notes, not drawing attention to yourself, not having your technology interrupt the meeting. So they've really done some great work. Some of the third-party apps I wish worked a little better. I wish it was a little easier to use Twitter and Facebook. But I wish it was easier to use Facebook on any application that you want to talk about. So
true.
I don't want to. Yeah.
How do you feel now that you have one that there is scalability? In a way, your description kind of reminds me of PacMate, in which you could, you know, remove the Braille display and connect it to different head units or just use the Braille display on its own. Do you feel, or is Humanware communicated that, you know, one of the biggest concerns from the community is that Android 4-ish, 4X, is it going to upgrade? You know, there's better voice, there's better web views and better controls in later versions of Android, or have they said that you're going to be able to, say, change out that Braille display at some point in the unit's lifetime?
I don't know so much about the Braille display. I asked Greg Stelson about the version of Android, and his explanation to me, as I understand it, as I'm paraphrasing, it was because they needed to go so deep into the API, the app, application interface to do what they needed to do with Keysoft, that they felt at the time that 4.4 KitKat was the most stable version or that they could work with, but they in no way ruled out upgrading at some point. And, you know, yeah, that would be a possibility in the future, certainly to upgrade the Android operating system.
Well, they just deprecated version 2.3, so it's got a long life at 2016. It could go for a while. Before I move over to Shelley for comments and thoughts, were you a Keysoft fan? Did you find some would say with Star Wars being popular and comic books in the movie theaters that there's some nostalgia happening for older Americans in 2016. South Park certainly made fun of that this year. Did you find yourself going, oh yeah, Keysoft, I missed you?
Very little. I used the Braille Note Empower, and there might be some similarities, but I would say not a lot. I mean, they really have rewritten the suite of software. And I think to the better, to be honest. And so, yeah, there might be a thing or two that you say, yeah, I kind of remember that. But by and large, it feels like a new suite of programs to me.
It's interesting because I think a lot of people were excited about this product before it became available, and especially in the context of all the interesting Braille stuff that was announced last year. And we talked about the year of Braille, and I still think 2016 was that, although a lot of products that were promised were not ready by the end of 2016, and the Braille Note Touch had the advantage of being one of the most interesting ones and also one that shipped. So, and it's interesting because people, what I've seen and read and heard is that people give it a lot of credit for its innovation. And I've never used Keysoft, so I won't venture an opinion, but I did have that sort of thought when I heard that that was the basis of it, was that it would probably feel like a comfortable place for a lot of people who had used older note takers with Keysoft. So it's interesting to hear that they've actually innovated even within something that's familiar to a lot of people. And the criticism that people did level at it is, wait, it's a note taker. It's more than $5,000, when the other part of what we're discussing in Braille is less cost and whether a note taker is even something that's a necessity or is desirable when you have displays of high quality that are quite a lot less expensive. And it seems like Humanware, having decided to do a note taker, kind of went all in on it. I mean, you could have said, well, we're going to do a note taker and we're going to base it on an old Windows CE operating system or an old or a super old Android, as opposed to, you know, KitKat, as Joe points out, it's not that old. It's old, but it's not like 2.3, that, you know, that still has a lot of support in the Android world, that level of the operating system. It will be interesting to see how fast they feel compelled to upgrade the operating system, and whether that's going to be a function of needing to support third-party apps that require a new operating system, or whether they're able to do things in the Braille Note Touch because they have a newer version of the operating system. I don't know what the answers to those questions are, but yeah. It certainly belongs here as an example of an innovative product that shipped in 2016 that has a lot of people talking. And for those people who are fortunate enough to be able to bring one into their life, it sounds like it's unique, and it creates an opportunity to bridge the gap between Braille-only devices and the larger world of mobile operating systems. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Humanware had been viewed as being a legacy type company, right? For what you said, Windows CE and other operating systems that it had relied on in the past. I think it's fascinating that this is a story this far in the countdown, but still a story in general. If we put something out about the Braille Note Touch, people are genuinely interested or want to hear a demo or want to get their hands on one, or if they go to convention, that's one of the things that's on their list to see. And that hasn't died down over the year. It is definitely held its own, whether that be, again, the nostalgia reason, because there are a lot of fans of Keysoft out there, or Victor Reader Stream fans or what have you. Humanware is doing pretty good at hanging in there in a world that's going to have a lot of challenges in 2017. And they have a lot of mainstream interested too. You know, there was Good Morning America coverage. Apple is carrying the Brilliant on the Apple Store site under accessibility. They seem to be a company that's finding ways in, you know, small nooks and crannies to hang in there, whether it be in the AT blindness market or in mainstream in general, just to get some type of mind share out there.
Well, can I point out too that they have, it's a product that I reviewed for Access World, they have a 12-inch Android tablet that doubles as a magnifier, which is not unique. There are other companies that are doing that, but it's a bold implementation and it's well done. And so clearly they're looking to the future in both the blindness and the low vision side. And obviously they're in a much more competitive environment with some of what's going on with the other AT companies. And it feels to me like they're going in the right direction.
And they were one of the handhelds we looked at when you and I were considering new handhelds this year for upgrading our fleet within our house for daily use.
Yep.
You and I had that conversation about several of the handheld.
Yeah, those are nice products. I mean, yeah. Again, they're not unique, but they're nice products and they're well made. And I think Humanware absolutely has to be considered when you're looking at, I want a blindness or low vision product. They're playing in those categories, and they're playing either at the top end or in the middle, and they're not in the commodity market by any means. And given the competitive pressures out there, as I say, I feel like they're holding up well, at least so far.
Yeah. Jamie, you'll have to, we'll have to get you on, and you and Scott will have to have a grand debate at some point when that sees the next upgrade or update, and we'll just have to have a good chin wag about what's going on with that particular unit.
Sounds good.
We are here at the middle-ish of the program. If you have disagreed with some of the things that we've said, or if you have your own version of a top 10 list based off of what you've seen, you can always write us at feedback@blindbargains.com. Let us know on Twitter, which would be twitter.com/blindbargains, or you can leave your comments in the show notes right there in the comment section over at blindbargains.com, and then head on over to audio, and then come down to episode 87. Which would be This Year in Assistive Technology 2016, which you could hear on your Amazon Echo or your Google Home. The rise of the digital assistant is upon us all. And as you heard earlier, that Shelley has a Dot, and you know that I have an Echo. Oh, excuse me. I don't have an Echo. I have a Home. JJ had an Echo and is selling it. If those of you who follow him on Twitter or Blind Bargains know that he sold his or is selling his Amazon Echo at the time of this recording and going straight into Google Home, you heard Jamie say that he would like one of these devices. It makes your life easier. I have to say, it's not just a, yeah, there's some glim and glam, but when you get into home automation, as Jamie was alluding to earlier, there's a lot you can do with these devices. I was just reading before we came into the recording that at CES, Whirlpool announced that you can connect your Amazon Echo to their line of washing machines and other appliances. That seems like something new, but Samsung's been doing it not only through SmartThings, which was a platform that they purchased, but they were doing it in other ways too, LG as well. So definitely we're starting to see the Wi-Fi T-cuddles of the world connect to the Internet of Things and can be controlled by our voice assistants. This kind of touches on our Amazon story earlier. Amazon had kind of a negative aspect in our community, but that has completely turned around with Echo because people seem to be in love with, I don't want to say the A word, that just sounds wrong and dirty, Amazon's assistant. Yeah, there we go.
Absolutely. I mean, I just look on Twitter and you'll see references to the use of that product and that we don't want to say because if you do, it'll activate in people's homes. But I mean, it's obvious that there's a lot of buzz on social media and it's good. Good buzz. If that might be a podcast title. Who knows?
I know. Yeah, there's entirely that could easily be a colon or at least a dash or a hyphen. You know, I think maybe who knows.
And again, I think the competitive nature of that market is only going to be good because Amazon got there first, and one of the best things they did, in my opinion, is put out the Dot, because just as they've done with their tablets, they've now created multiple price points. I wouldn't have bought an Echo because I didn't feel like it was a cost-effective thing. I was given the Dot for Christmas, but I probably could have ponied up the $40, and you have the ability to connect it to speakers, which is the only real issue with the Dot. But Google Home now being out there, that gets Amazon's attention, it gets Apple's attention, it probably gets Microsoft's attention. I don't know whether they're planning any sort of hardware.
They're talking about Cortana in the home. And then where's Siri in all of this, you know, is the question a lot of investors as well as Apple pundits have wondered. So much so, you know, was the AirPort Extreme kind of phased out because you could do a Siri / Echo / Home, which would certainly play into HomeKit. And yeah, I agree with you. Like Mom said, nobody wants to be first, but everybody will kill to be second. But kudos for Amazon for having some pretty good commercials. I don't know if you guys saw those, but the ads were pretty effective. And the gentleman who was trying to cook dinner and then, you know, things catch on fire. So he tells Echo to buy flowers for his girlfriend, or, you know, the guy who's freezing and he wants to know what the weather's like in Florida. Those are really effective commercials and they're very humorous, and they advertise like crazy on NFL, on major primetime shows, in web advertising. So if you were watching, say, something on the CW app on iOS, you would run into one of these ads. So when they knew that Google Home was coming to the party, they definitely went on the offensive and went out there to get mindshare and was aggressively pricing. Google Home is doing quite well for itself because the Chromecast name does extremely well. I tend to like my Google Home and have 10 years of data in Google, so I'm more in the Google ecoverse, but I enjoy being able to cast to my devices. Since the last time I was on a Blind Bargains podcast, we now have two Chromecast videos, one built into the television here on my Vizio, and then a separate one that's connected to a television upstairs. And we have the Google Home, and we have a Google Chromecast Audio, and we'll probably get a second Home for upstairs because we have one downstairs. We just find ourselves calling out to it in the office. And then when you're upstairs, when you're not near it, you find yourself doing that. It kind of works into your psyche, and you have that Star Trek moment where you just want to say, computer, you know, what about blah, blah, blah? Oh, crud, I don't have that active or on. And you find yourself going to another device, like let's say Siri, and being kind of disappointed or let down or kind of flummoxed if you don't get the same information you think you would get on the other device. And it is a really strange thing. As much as people are worried about privacy, I really have incorporated these devices into my workflow and I enjoy them immensely. And I hope you two do the same the more you get to play with these things, because
A couple things. First of all, Siri had great ads back when they were the only game in town. So let's not give short shrift. I haven't seen the Amazon ads. I don't watch much television at all. But the Siri ads were memorable. And the Amazon ads, from the way you describe them, are memorable in the same way. So that's great. The second and more important thing in terms of competition is it's not merely whether the Googleverse or the Amazonverse has more adherence, but it's going to be whether all of the people who make devices that work with them. You were talking about the Whirlpool washers and obviously lights and all the other Internet of Things, smart things type devices, whether they're going to be compelled to support both Amazon and Google and then Amazon and then Microsoft and Apple if they enter this market, and how those companies are going to navigate having to support those multiple devices. I don't know how complex those APIs are and whether if Apple comes out with one tomorrow, and the AirPort Extreme isn't phased out yet. That's a big rumor, and it probably is the case. My guess is that if we got a hardware device from Apple, it would be based around the Apple TV. And the last thing I'll say is I remain a curmudgeon about these devices to the extent that I don't really want them running my life, and I don't want them invading my privacy, and I do not want personally, and it's a personal decision, to feel like I am dependent on them or that I would miss it if it's not in all parts of my house. And that's just the way I choose to live my life. I like the idea that the device can be as intrusive as I want it to be or not intrusive. I have the Dot in my kitchen. I have figured out exactly how far away I have to be in order for it to hear me, which is just a nice tech experiment on its own. But I find them interesting, and I find them to be toys at this point, and it will be interesting, and probably not this year, but in the next couple of years, it'll be interesting to see what sticks and what people really are using these for once they get tired of saying, please turn the lights outside on and make them yellow.
That's interesting that you would say that, because the friend with whom I spoke, he and his wife, my wife and I go to see them every New Year's Eve, and we've done that for the last several years. So for a couple of years now, it may have just been last year that they had the Echo, and they talked to it constantly. But this year, and I hadn't really thought about that till you were talking, Shelley, they didn't. They used it some, but it wasn't like a constant chatter conversation with the device. So I'm wondering if the more you have these devices, if you figure out, okay, this is what I really want to use it for, but I can set a timer on my watch just as easily as telling it to do so. Or, you know, there might, I'm kind of curious if people talk to it less or more discriminately the longer they have it.
Timers are my favorite thing. That's the one thing I've done every single day. I love walking into my kitchen and setting a timer, and I have a hack to do recipes, which are fun. But again, it's like, I feel like it's at the toy stage at this point. Sure. Not that it's not a capable device, but I think we really don't know how they're going to be part of our lives yet, and we won't know for a few years.
The novelty argument is a good one, or debate or discussion point, however you wish to categorize it, is a good one. I like having multi-room audio, right? So I could have a song from Google Music or Spotify or TuneIn or something going all over the house. So if I'm here by myself and I'm having to do a lot of things both upstairs and downstairs, I don't necessarily have to worry about losing myself in a particular song or podcast or the like, because I can kind of multi-room really easily amongst all the devices. And I used to use Xbox with Netflix and Kinect and have voice control for play, pause, fast forward and the like. And now I do that with Google Home. For me, it is kind of a welcome thing to be able to tell the device, if I can't find the remote or something like that, to kind of do that. So I gravitated to that naturally because I had had it before in various functions or forms through other devices. As we speak, Google did release in December, as I said, the ability to do custom actions. There's about 54 at the time of the recording. Some of them are ridiculous, like Song Pop, and you can guess songs, and some are not as good as you would hope, like Domino's. So you can order pizza through your Google Home, and you can do a lot of that through Echo too. I imagine the gap will be captured very quickly because, again, Amazon and Google are not too far off from each other at their cores. They've just forked each other in different ways. So I see that kind of happening, but I agree with Shelley. If we take a page from the video game market, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, there's always a lead SKU, and you develop for that lead console, and then you have enough resources or time to develop for that second one. But what happens to the third one or the fourth one? Or do we do a, you know, a smaller version of that for the handheld market? That may be something that will be interesting to see. Amazon seems to be okay with people building Alexa into devices. There are a lot of Alexa-enabled devices coming out of CES. Whether those come to market or not is always a big question, but at least partnerships through LG and other places seem to be happening. Google seems to be leaning more into video with Chromecast, so a lot more televisions with Chromecast built in. And then that then leaves, like Shelley was indicating, does that mean we see a new Apple TV fifth generation to be able to incorporate some of the things that work with what they want to do next? Or does that mean your Windows 10 PC becomes your new, you know, Cortana becomes your new Echo-like device? That's certainly something JJ has wondered about on the show and said he doesn't see himself interacting with his laptop in certain ways. Shelley, before we leave this subject, what about Siri on the Mac? Does that kind of, do you use that also? Since that's been out for a little bit, do you find yourself using that like you would on your phone? Or really is just that secondary audio interface not the future yet for you?
So I have a iMac on my desk, and that is what I use for most of my work. And so having this big desktop thing means that that's where I spend a lot of my time. And so I have used Siri for the Mac, not quite in the same way as I do for the phone. I will admit it still feels like a little novelty, but I will tell it to go to websites, things like that. That's kind of fun. And I ask it the temperature. And so I probably use Siri on my phone more than I do on the Mac, but and I haven't used Siri on my laptop. It was interesting because I put Sierra on my two machines that I use, and I looked in there with Siri on the laptop, and I was like, I can't see myself sitting in a coffee shop talking to my laptop that way. But I have used it, and I think it's certainly not yet as full-featured as the iPhone. A lot of people complain about Siri in general, and I've certainly had my issues with it. Mm-hmm. But I guess there isn't a compelling enough, there's nothing on the Mac that allows me to automate in the way that I could with, say, keyboard shortcuts via Siri. I want to do things like tell it to file stuff in particular folders. I'd like to say something like clean up my desktop and have it know what I mean because I've been able to program intelligence into it. But I'm glad it's there, but I am certainly not using it every single day.
Yeah. So that gets back to where Jamie was indicating with the other individuals, you know, is this a novelty? Is this going to be pervasive? The stickiness, as Shelley indicated earlier, is definitely going to be something that we'll have to watch in 2017 plus the other competitors. I know that I'm probably going to get that second Google Home and looking very excited to how things are going and really enjoying it. And I disagree with Lisa completely. She said that it doesn't look like an air freshener. It looked like marshmallow fluff, as you heard on episode 86.
I hadn't heard that.
There is that.
It's totally an air freshener.
Well, as you can see, Joe and Jamie and Shelley have a lot to talk about with the year in AT 2016, so much so that we're going to save the rest for next time. So join us for Blind Bargains Cast 88 coming up soon, where we will talk about the top stories of 2016. Will it be VFO? Will it be Microsoft? Will it be Orbit? Something else? You'll just have to come back next time to find out. Thanks again to Hims for sponsoring this week's podcast, Hims-INC.com, Hims Lifestyle Innovation. Thanks so much for listening to the Blind Bargains Cast. We'll talk to you next time.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2017.